Meet Anne Marie Barugu. She's a Kenyan businesswoman who's been active all her life, even after a skydiving accident. She's been a fitness instructor, co-founded an activewear fashion brand, and even launched an annual fitness challenge which attracted an international following. We spoke in Nairobi about her inspirational fitness journey and life in Kenya.
3, 2, 1.
So Anne-Marie, just wanted to get started by asking you, what does fitness mean to you?
So fitness to me is really just appreciating the fact that our bodies are meant to move. I think very often people sort of equate it to, or have a very strong sort of idea as to what fitness is. It means, you know, you're running miles, or you're, you know, doing triathlons, or you're, you know, lifting really heavy in the gym. I think fitness to me, and of course it's a very personal opinion, is just the ability to function well physically, you know, and with the mindset that, yes, our bodies are designed to be as active as possible. And what lifestyles, or rather our lifestyles, have become so inactive as we've gone on. I mean, I look at kids today who are sitting down and playing on phones and iPads and playing video games and stuff like that. Whereas not that long ago, during my childhood, you know, we were playing outside. You know, TV started at 6 o'clock in the evenings. And, you know, so we were having to, you know, as kids, just play outside. And obviously we're very active compared to the majority of kids today.
Yeah. So Anne-Marie, if we rewind, in fact, let's go back to your childhood. So right. What sort of physical activity did you do?
Okay. So I grew up in a home where my parents really believed in the values around what physical activity does for your mental state as well. And so in a lot of ways, we weren't given a choice. You know, we were really encouraged to play outside. Like I say, those days it was very different to the way it is today. But, you know, we'd come home from school and my parents would be like, you know, hop on your bikes, go off and take a ride outside. And the security in Nairobi, of course, was very different to what it is today. And I remember we'd be out, it would be getting dark, when we'd be like, okay, you know what, it's time for us to go back home. But, you know, we'd be left free, put it that way. So there was the fun sort of exercise, but then there was also the very regimented kind of exercise. And it's funny because my parents and I were laughing about it the other day. So I grew up with 3 siblings, 3 brothers, and we were all, I'm not going to use the word forced, but we were strongly encouraged to get into sport. And my parents were like, it doesn't matter what it is that you're doing, but you have to get into a sport and take it seriously enough. And it was only years later that I realized that the reason they did that was they felt that sport would not just instill a certain discipline, but also keep us out of trouble by the time we got to our teens, which worked. Because I remember when I got to sort of 13, 14 years old and my friends had started to go out to clubs and stuff like that, I would be too busy, to be honest. I'd be like, you know, I'm competing tomorrow, or, you know, there'd be this match or this competition. And I mean, I was a swimmer. So for me, it was all about improving my time. So I had early morning training sessions, you know, off season. I had competitions and galas, you know, on weekends. So I just didn't have the time or the desire to be going out with my friends. Going back to the way we grew up, my dad insisted that it was three days a week, we ran together as a family.
Ooh, okay.
The only one that had a choice was my youngest brother, who I think at the time was 7. Yeah, 6 or 7 years old. Mm-hmm. But we used to have to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and do, it depended on the day, but it was between a 3 and 5 kilometer run.
Wow. You
know, which I absolutely hated.
Oh,
like,
really?
I really, really hated
it. No, because in fact, I wanted to ask you, clearly yeah. Kenya is so well known internationally for the Olympic, you know, performances in terms of long distance running. So right. It doesn't sound like you inherited the Kenyan long distance running gene.
No, in fact, I didn't. And my dad used to really laugh a lot, and he'd be like, because I was a very good swimmer. So he'd be like, oh gosh, Anne-Marie, you're just like a fish in water. But when it comes to land, you know, you're like the fish struggling out of, you know, on land. But in hindsight, it was great because I never had to I never struggled or even thought about weight issues, for example. It really helped my swimming, which is, you know, what was my first love, so to speak. And when I did venture into other sports later, it was just a really good foundation, I'd say, you know, because I went through a phase where I was playing tennis, I was playing squash, you know, that running fitness that I had developed was quite key to why I was able to excel in other sports as well. And then just going back to the discipline as well, which is, I guess for me, something I tried to also pass on to my children as well.
Before we get on to that, in Australia, when I went to school, exercise and sport was part of the curriculum. So we had a couple of sessions, you know, during school hours every week. And then within the school, you were also encouraged to play a sport and it tended to be seasonal. Mm-hmm. So in the school curriculum, when you were growing up here, mm-hmm. what emphasis was there on sport?
I mean, I'd say it was strong, you know, so it was a subject like any other on the school timetable. You didn't have a choice. And actually, if you came into school and had forgotten your PE kit or your swimming kit, I mean, there were serious consequences. What was funny is that I think we used to have two PE classes a week and two swimming classes or lessons a week. PE, for me, it just depended on what it was. I hated hockey. I hated netball. I hated rounders. I hated cross country. Like literally anything on land, I didn't particularly enjoy at the time. But yes, so we did have that seasonal calendar as well. You know, there was netball season, rounder season, and hockey season, and cross country as well. Mm. And when I went to the UK as well, during the winter, it was hockey for sure. And summer was, I think it was the netball and rounders. I can't remember, you know, it was back in the day. I went through a stage where I would sometimes volunteer to pick up my nieces from school. And obviously they're much younger than my kids are. So this is literally just before COVID, I'd say. And I'd be blown away. Obviously, I'm not going to mention the school, but I'd be blown away that there were so many kids that would be out sitting on the benches and not participating in the PE classes.
Mm.
And for me, the fact that they were given the option to sort of just sit on the bench and watch the others was quite mind-blowing to me. The seriousness that a math class should be taken at. I mean, you wouldn't allow a child to sort of sit in the corridors outside and not participate or not be, you know, not in attendance of that class. The fact that PE was almost looked at as an option, I think potentially is a huge problem moving forward, because it ceases to teach the child the importance of what the essence of getting out there and being active is.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, did your own children, I gather you have two children.
I have two children, yes.
Did they have a much more positive experience with sport at their school?
They did, but also it's something that they've always enjoyed. They've both always been quite active. So, you know, the school, the aide, did take it quite seriously. I think for them, if anything, the nightmare was I was such an involved mom. So I was volunteering for, you know, parents' teams and training the teams and that kind of stuff. And we still have a really good laugh about it, because I was really in their face when it came to that aspect of their school lives.
Yeah. So you were most definitely encouraging them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
And the reason for that is what? Is it because you had an active childhood and you can see the benefits and you wanted to instill that in your own children?
Yes, that's all it was. That's all it was. I still go back to the discipline that I believe getting up and moving gives one. You know, there's so many benefits. So it's not just the looking good aspect mentally, and I still struggle with this very many times, where, you know, you have this mental ping pong going on in your head. Gosh, I've woken up, I should go to class, but I don't feel like, I'm tired. It takes a lot to just get up and get on with it, but the benefits are so massive. You know, I find that when I do exercise, the mental clarity that comes with it, and I just feel much more productive. I enjoy my food much more. I'm much more energetic. I feel better. The quality of my sleep is much better. I mean, there's so many benefits around that. So with my kids, I found that their performance in school would improve. again, they'd be tired in the evenings. It's social as well. It teaches kids, particularly with the team sports, you know, just getting on with each other. You don't have to like each other, you know, but, you know, when there's a bigger picture, which I think team sports helps to cultivate, I think the benefits are massive.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, Anne-Marie, you are approaching your 50s.
I actually hit 50 this year. I turned 50 in January. Yes. Yes.
Like I said, good of you to admit that publicly. So can we run through your exercise routine for you now?
Okay. I have to admit that I was doing extremely well up until COVID. COVID obviously changed a lot of things for a lot of people. But the biggest struggle for me became or was the fact that, you know, obviously gyms and studios were closed at the time. When COVID first struck, I was stuck in the UK for 6 months. And the lockdown in London was really, really quite severe. And it obviously had an impact on the traction that I had gotten in terms of working out and the discipline of, you know, doing something every day. Key to that was the fact that I've never been good at working out at home. For me, even when I do work out alone, so for example, if I go to a gym, I like the buzz. I like the energy of what other people are doing. I may not be the most social person, but I just, you know, I'm able to sort of immerse myself and just lose myself in whatever it is that I'm doing. And actually, for the longest time, I enjoyed working out on my own. More recently, I'm into group classes, but that's something that's sort of come along, and I'd say more recently, like in the last maybe 5 years. Again, because I enjoy the interaction, I enjoy the camaraderie, put it that way, that comes in with, you know, sweating it out within that space, you know. Yeah, so COVID was tricky. I struggled with the whole YouTube training and, you know, virtual sessions and stuff like that. But when the weather started to improve, like I mentioned, I was in London, it was nice to be able to go to the parks and do stuff like that and, you know, to get out and run and all that kind of stuff. The running did have an impact on me because I ended up injuring my knee. It was an old injury that reemerged. Mm-hmm. And so for the better part of last year, I really was not consistent in terms of my working out. So add that to freaking menopause, which is probably a whole other conversation. The more or the less I did in terms of exercise, the harder it got to get back into it, if that makes sense. So I'd go through 2 weeks of, oh no, I really need to get back to it. I really need to get back to it. And then, you know, wake up one day and I go, okay, yes, you know, so go to an exercise class or go to the gym or, you know, go out and do whatever it is. And then I'd be sore for 3 days and then I'd be like, okay, just need to rest and whatever. So I was just very up and down for the better part of last year. And then turning 50 at the beginning of the year, I'm like, no, this has got to change. It doesn't help that I'm sort of sitting and complaining and talking about what it is that I should do and knowing what the benefits are, you know, so knowing that struggle, that initial struggle to just get up and do it, 5 minutes into it, the story changes and you feel so much better. And so, yeah, so I'm at a point now, I'm back to enjoying it. I'm back to also very accepting of the fact that I can't do a lot of the stuff that I was doing 4 or 5 years ago. It's not to say that I can't, but I'm more forgiving or more understanding and more accepting of the fact that it's a process, you know. So for example, just before COVID or up until COVID, I was doing, you know, these amazing push-ups and, you know, I could just keep going on and on. And so the frustration that comes now is, you know, having or struggling to get to 10 and having to do them with my knees down or whatever it is. I think I was quite hard on myself because there's a part of you that remembers how easy it was, but the body is, you know, what it is, and not getting any younger, but also understanding that it's a process, and I think the body is amazing. It can do a lot that we give it credit for, but it's important to understand that it takes time and it takes the commitment and the process to get it to do.
Yeah. See, you and I were chatting recently, and you had told me that you did 4 classes at the gym in one day.
Yes.
And my initial reaction was, wow, how are you going to manage, you know, the injury risk from that? But, I mean, just to sort of also paint a picture of your level of activity, how much exercise are you doing at the moment? I mean, assuming you're not doing 4 exercise classes every day.
No, not at all. So maybe I can backtrack and, you know, and I think I had mentioned to you this initiative that I'd started. It was actually at the start of 2018, which I call the 365 Challenge. And I think there's lots of 365s out there. But mine was basically derived from the fact that I had had so many, I would have so many conversations with friends who were at the time, you know, we were all in our mid-40s at the time. And the thing that I would hear the most is that, oh, I don't exercise because I have no time. You know, I signed up for this gym, but I just can't get there and the traffic and all this kind of stuff. Or I started, but, you know, the gym is not for me, or I just don't enjoy this and I don't enjoy that. And why I launched into that was to basically disprove that. And my whole thing was, you don't need hours and hours to work out. It's a commitment that you have to make to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But also you have to be as practical and as real with yourself as possible. So, for example, don't go and sign up for spin classes if you don't enjoy spin. It's got to be something that is sustainable and that you enjoy. And again, going back to your original question, what is fitness? It's not about doing what people perceive as what's going to make you fit. So, for example, if walking is what you enjoy to do, you know, as long as you're up and moving, that's great. And walking is a fantastic exercise. And don't go and sign up for a fancy gym that's across town if it's going to get you, you're not going to be able to sustain that because, you know, getting across town is going to be close to impossible. So I always think if you're going to work out, it's got to fit into your day, which means if you plan to go to a gym or to a studio, let that studio be either close to home or close to work so that it flows into your day.
Mm.
But going back to this whole 365, so my whole thing was, you know, for social media, for example, and I'd say this to a lot of my friends, you know, how much time are you spending on Instagram? I bet you that 30 minutes you can put down to doing whatever kind of activity that you enjoy. So whether it's dancing, it's swimming, it's walking, it's golf, whatever it is, as long as you commit that time to you.
Now, Anne-Marie, I have a quote from you, which is, the 365 Day Fitness Challenge is a commitment I made to myself.
Yes.
I feel I'm important enough not to let myself down.
Absolutely.
So what exactly did the challenge involve? So you said to yourself at the start of 2018, I'm going to do 30 minutes of exercise every day all year.
Yes. Yes.
And how did that go?
And so it was, I'm going to do 30 minutes. I'm going to do a minimum of 30 minutes of exercise every day. The commitment was, on the days that I wake up and I'm feeling strong, I'm going to push myself. Okay, so that goes back to the 4 classes that you're talking about, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So really pushing myself on the days that I felt strong and energetic, and that was, you know, through spin classes, going out on runs, weight training, whatever it was. But then on days that I was just feeling too fatigued or too tired or not in the mood, honoring myself enough to just get up, and I mean, I was calling it active rest, so just moving. So going out for a walk or dancing or whatever it was, just as long as I was moving. And it went really well. I mean, it became something that was so programmed and ingrained to the point that I remember actually waking up as early as 3:30 in the morning sometimes to go on a run because I had a flight to catch. I had to be at the airport by 5 or whatever it was, you know? And because I chose to share that journey on Instagram as a method of being accountable, holding myself accountable, I didn't slack. And I did that every day for 3 years. Yes. Yes.
So it wasn't just 2018.
So at the end of 2018, and I remember when I clocked in that last workout on New Year's Eve, Leading up to the end of the year, you know, I did get a lot of support on Instagram with people saying, oh my God, this is amazing. And are you going to do it again? Can I do it with you? And so got a good group of women. I think there were initially there were about 20, so there were about 200 people actually who from different parts of the world who were like, I want to do this with you. And it was nice to have played a role in forming like a little community of 365ers, as you know, as we used to call ourselves. Obviously, not everybody went through with it, but a good number did. And there were some amazing stories that came out of that. And for me, the biggest achievement was having played a role in dispelling that myth that you need to be, or you need to have all this time to be able to work out, and that it is actually very, very possible. So just, you know, keep moving.
It's interesting now that you've given that context, and then you were talking earlier about COVID and how it really interrupted things for you. I mean, clearly, because you had been so disciplined over 3 years, and then all of a sudden you're trying to do workouts in the kitchen.
The kitchen, my daughter's little studio, you know. And it was okay. Like 2020, I still did it, actually. 2021 is where the wheels just came, whatever. And again, it was injury related. And getting to a point where I was advised, you know, that the only thing really I could do was either swim or walk, which is all well and good. But for me, it wasn't what I perceive as, you know, sort of working out. Mm. And then, of course, the longer you don't do something, the danger is you get comfortable not doing anything. But the effects on me personally were just feeling even changes within my body, within as well, but also, you know, the flab then starting to come out and energy levels going down, just not feeling right.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, was it around that time that you had a skydiving accident?
Yes. So I had the skydiving accident at the end of 2018. So 1st of December 2018, which was that year that I started the 365.
So what happened?
So interestingly was, first of all, I had this great dream desire to become a skydiving instructor. So I had started the courses and was building up, you know, to the next level of certification. And I had a bad landing, was long and short of it.
Where were you?
In Diani.
Mm-hmm. So on the coast.
Yeah, on the coast. Kenyan coast. And basically what happened is that the wind direction changed as I was coming into land, and basically I got blown over land and landed in a tree. So hit the tree and fell down over 20 feet by the time I hit the ground. And I have to share what three different doctors, you know, independently told me. They were like, it's very evident that you work out. And they said, because your muscular system is obviously very strong. And they said a lot of the pain that you're feeling is because at impact, your muscles spasmed. And they did that to protect your organs and whatever it is. And had you not been working out, they said you would have definitely broken your hip, your spine and your rib, your rib cage, you know, because I landed really hard on my right side. Those injuries, and I broke my arm as well. But I remember that, like I say, the accident happened on the 1st of December, and I had posted my workout for that day. And it was just very ironic because I had done a yoga class that morning, and my Instagram post was me doing the tree pose.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, that was in the morning. And then in the evening, I'm like, knocked down by a tree. Yeah, whatever. Oh. But I remember when I was at Diani Hospital and they wanted to admit me, I'm like, no, you can't. I'm like, just treat me and let me go. And that was a fight that we had, you know, between the doctor and I. But eventually, I mean, they did just discharge me that night. And the following day, I did work out. I walked on the beach with my cast. I was in a lot of pain. And I remember at one point being on the pool bed and just trying to do leg lifts and sort of Pilates inspired movements. But I did my, I did my 30 minutes.
Wow, because at that point, many people, I'm sure, would have been still lying in the hospital.
Yes, many. And I, like I say, I did fight with a doctor as I'd go to spin classes with a cast on and, you know, hold the bike with whatever. And it was painful. But my thing was, I don't want to let myself down. This is a commitment that I made to myself. My legs are still fine. I'm still moving. I just have to adjust and figure out how I'm going to keep moving, because it could have been a lot worse. When I hit the ground, I remember being really upset with myself because initially I couldn't move at all. And I remember just this...
It must have been a shock.
It was a shock, but I was so angry with myself because I was like, if I'm paralyzed, this is the call I made. Like, I only have myself to blame. And so there was a gratitude that came with the fact that I'm still able to move. It was also about me honoring the fact that... And just being grateful for the fact that I could still move.
Anne-Marie, I wanted to touch on the fact that you've also been an instructor.
Yes.
So you teach Pilates, you've done high impact interval training.
Yeah.
So what impact did this accident have on not only your own personal commitment to exercise, but to any sort of instructing that you were doing at the time?
Yeah. So obviously I wasn't able to run any classes at the time, because then you've been to, you know, to be able to instruct, I mean, you've got to be able to demonstrate what it is that you're trying to get your class to do. And so I've never been very good at instructing just verbally. For me, it's very key to be able to be a part of the class and to set the tone and the energy of the class by doing that sort of demonstratively. So that was a pause. And also, I mean, the fact that I was in rehab, you know, for all intents and purposes, and there were a lot of things that in some ways I had to start from scratch. So again, I was talking earlier about, you know, this internal frustration I have over things that I'm not able to do now that I could do 3-4 years ago. When I got my cast removed, I couldn't lift a 250 ml water bottle, a 300 ml, whatever it was.
Wow.
And that's what I used as part of my rehab. So, you know, doing little dumbbell curls with what I used to always call and laugh at as, you know, baby weights. Yeah, just the process of sort of resetting and starting again, and also being aware that I wasn't in the space of, so for example, teaching, was just something I had to accept and get on with.
Anne-Marie, I want to turn to talk about some of the cultural norms in Kenya when it comes to body shape and to fitness and exercise. I mean, we've touched on the fact that Kenya is renowned for the depth of talent when it comes to long-distance running, also does very well women's volleyball and in other sports.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenya is also known as the walking nation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
In fact, I was going to ask you about it because I've had that quoted to me before, and I gather it came about because there is such a lot of walking done by so many Kenyans all over the country, I guess, including people who can't necessarily afford
public transport.
The transport. I mean, certainly I've observed, you know, in different parts of Kenya, you do tend to see people walking.
And from really early in the morning, actually. Yeah. I mean, I just didn't know that we were known as the walking nation. But it's true. Like, if I happen to be on the road super early in the morning, it's really amazing when you see like hordes of people, you know, walking to work and kids. It was my grandmother's birthday last week. She lives in Eldoret. So we had driven up, my mom and I drove up to go and see her. And we left Eldoret the following day at 5 a.m. And we were driving through, there's a little town called Burnt Forest, which really is super remote. And it was amazing to see how many kids had their backpacks and were walking, and you can't see where they're walking to because there's nothing. So I'm sure they're walking a minimum of maybe 5 kilometers or whatever it is to get to school, or more, because this was 5 o'clock in the morning. So even assuming that school starts at 7, that's a 2-hour walk that they were going to do. I think it's great. It's sad if it's out of, you know, people not being able to afford transportation, for example. But the flip side of the coin is that it has a direct impact with their longevity and their health, their physical health, which is good. I mean, I love to see also people with not necessarily fancy bicycles, but they're cycling to work. But what's also funny, Julie, is, for example, so I've had an issue with my car for, you know, a while now. And when I walk, so I made a decision again, you know, if I can get to where it is that I'm going to on foot, I'll do that. But when I started to do that, you know, there'd be very many times I'd get texts from friends, you know, I saw you walking, is everything okay? You know, whatever. And meanwhile, I'm walking 800 meters. But what is interesting is in Nairobi, I don't consider Nairobi a walking city as I do other parts of the world where you go and actually you're fine, you'll walk thousands and thousands of steps. Our culture here is if you have a car, you hop into the car and drive around the corner. And I've done that very many times. And so it's been interesting now sort of shifting my mindset around, no, I'm going to visit a friend who lives 3 kilometers away. Surely, you know, I can walk. And this is what's really nice, that the city now is starting to create sidewalks, because that's part of the reason.
I was just about to mention that, because it is noticeable.
Yes.
And in fact, in a lot of areas where I've walked previously, which was a bit hairy, where you're on the side of a major road and you're literally kind of in a ditch,
you
know, walking over rocks now, there's some beautiful sidewalks.
Yes, exactly.
That have gone in and people are using them.
Yeah, which is really nice to see. It's nice to see. It's nice to walk on them. And yes, I think in the long run, they will recreate that pride and enjoyment around just walking within neighborhoods and taking kids out for walks and that sort of stuff, which is a good thing.
What is the cultural attitude in Kenya between being well-rounded or plump and wealth?
Oh, yeah. So that, of course, I think it's very culturally ingrained as well. And I laugh because even growing up, like if people put on weight, the old mamas and, you know, the grannies would be like, oh, you're looking really good. You know, now you're looking healthy, you know. So health was always equated to being on the plumper side. Same thing with men. You know, if a man got married and remained slim or skinny, whatever, then it was, you know, your wife isn't cooking well enough, or why are you not eating at home and all that kind of stuff. And the thinking around the big pot belly and stuff means the guy is happy and healthy and settled. And this is where I think I have to be careful, because I think there's also the urban sort of thinking versus the cultural
aspects. More traditional thinking.
Whatever. I think the more traditional thinking is still that. The rounder, bigger you are means you're wealthier, you're eating better, you're happier. Then, I mean, I don't think the health aspects are considered, and it might just be an educational thing, but I think culture still plays quite a big role in that, for the most part. You know?
And do you know many women who want to be more curvaceous?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's become a big thing now. And again, I struggle with it, to be honest. And I mean, I say this purely, it's my own personal opinion. I think people's body types are different, that's for sure. And it's okay to be curvy and all this kind of stuff. And I'm really big also on just embracing who you are and embracing what your body looks like, you know. I think we're all beautiful in our own way. Where I beg to differ is when one becomes very comfortable in rocking those curves, or thinking it's okay to have those, you know, big voluptuous curves, but doesn't exercise, if that makes sense. I think from a health perspective, it is a known fact that obesity or high body fat percentage does play a role in creating lifestyle disease or whatever it is. So I think as long as you know that you're doing what it is that you can to live a healthy life and eat moderately healthy. I mean, I'm really big on, you know, just balance. I think, I mean, that's where I'm at.
Anne-Marie, you're the co-founder of a fashion label, mm-hmm. Vivo.
Yes.
So I guess that that means you've had to be quite mindful of the sizing mm-hmm. of clothes.
Yes.
So since you started that business, what has been the brand's philosophy to sizes? Because it's a women's fashion brand.
Yes, yeah. So first of all, yes, I am a co-founder. I'm not active in the business anymore. But when we started it, it was...
And how long ago was that?
So that was in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it was meant to have been a range of fitness and dancewear. That's where we actually started. So the clothing and the fashion came way after. And even as we introduced it, we believed that it was just to supplement the fitness, yoga and dancewear that we had. But over time, we found, actually quite quickly on, we found that the fitness stuff and the yoga stuff and the dance stuff wasn't moving as fast as the clothing. And obviously being a business and wanting to survive, that's where we ended up moving towards. And again, you know, initially we were importing quite a lot of the clothing from the Far East, predominantly China, from Thailand as well, a little bit from South Africa. But we found the sizing was an issue.
Too small?
Too small, yeah. And because, you know, African bodies are curvier, we're bigger around the hips. And so for example, I'm not a big person, but with the Chinese sizing, I was a double XL. And so you can imagine locally, you know, for somebody a size or two bigger than me, you know, there was nothing within our range to accommodate that body type. And so my partner, co-founder, did the best thing ever, actually. So she learned about the whole design process, and that's where the company then sort of steered its way towards. And just the discoveries around that as well, because, again, by skin tone, there were certain colors, for example, before that we would get in stock and wouldn't move as much. And so producing locally meant that, A, we're able to design clothes that fit mm-hmm. the African body, but also fabrics and colors that suit our skin tones. So that's the philosophy right now. It's... you know, changing, first of all, making fashion affordable and accessible to Kenyans or to Africans, and changing the way women feel, because we are dressing or producing clothes that will look good on the African woman.
Mm. Yeah. Do you happen to know the biggest size in the Vivo
good
brand
question.
These days?
Good question. I believe it's an XL, you know, but again, you know, our sizes are... may not necessarily. So I don't know how that would compare with, for example, an H&M XL, you know, but I think we do size small, medium, large and XL. But I don't know what that translates to in terms of measurements.
Now, I know that there is growing concern in Kenya that the rates of people who are overweight and obese is growing.
Yeah.
And yet, and I checked this the other day, Kenya is still among the best performing nations in the world in terms of having low rates of obesity. So let's say that the average, which varied across a couple of different studies I saw, was between 2.7% of the population and 7.5% of the Kenyan population being obese.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Yeah, in contrast, Australia is in the top 20 most obese countries, with around 30% of the population classified as obese. And this has been a long time coming. But, I mean, can you ever see a time where Kenya might need to introduce some sort of a campaign to encourage people to be more active?
I imagine that Australia, being so outdoorsy, has, or most people, adopt or live a very active lifestyle. So that's quite shocking for me to hear.
Certainly COVID didn't help.
Yes.
But like I said, this trend has been a long time coming.
Yeah. So, yes, I think there would be room for a campaign like, or campaigns like that here in Kenya, particularly in the urban areas, because, again, just going by what I see these days, I see there's been a very sharp or very noticeable increase in children who are obese, for example. Like when I grew up, I mean, I can count the number of kids that I knew, you know, whether it was through school, up until my teenage, actually, I would struggle to think of who was obese.
Mm.
And again, it goes back to the point that we were forced to be quite active. When I say forced, there was not that much entertainment outside playgrounds, let's say. TV was very limited. There was no fast food, you know. I think now with, you know, all the pizza joints and the burgers and the all this sort of stuff.
Chicken.
That, the chicken, oh, yeah. You know, all that, which has really come, you know, quite prevalent in the last maybe, I don't know, 5 to 8 years. Yeah, because certainly even when my kids are in their 20s now, when they were growing up, I mean, I remember when Debonair's pizza came in and it was a really big thing because up until then there were no fast food joints. So fast food coupled by schools not taking subjects like PE seriously, coupled with, you know, video games and iPads that kids are left to, you know, use as entertainment, obviously has a direct correlation with their decreased levels of...
Anne-Marie, at the moment, it's a big talking point in Kenya and obviously in a number of other countries around the world about the struggling economy and a lot of people here doing it really tough.
Mm-hmm.
Summer, do you think that's a factor, that maybe parents can't afford to send their children to, you know, to play sport because it costs money?
No, I don't think that's an excuse at all, quite frankly. I mean, you know, there's, like you said, places like Karura, you can make it a habit. Let's go for a walk. Or, I mean, they're kids in villages. They're kids in the slums who are playing football outside. I don't think it's a money thing at all. I think if you want something or if you believe in something, you will make a way. And yeah, I don't equate it to... I mean, if you're going to think about, you know, putting your kids in, you know, sports clubs and stuff like that, then obviously there's that. But you can easily get your kids to invite their friends over and play games outside or whatever it is. Mm. I think it's just a mindset thing.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, in terms of diet, something I was quite intrigued about when I first arrived in Kenya is this whole notion of a plot. So the fact that many, many families have a plot of land and on that they grow fruit, vegetables, nuts, you know, herbs, all sorts of things. So does your family have a plot?
Yeah, my mum loves farming. So we have a family farm in not far from Nairobi, actually, and that's where she spends a good chunk of her day. I mean, she's gone through phases where she's grown different things. Right now it's a tea farm and she does dairy.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to this visit, even last week when I went to visit my grandmother, it was incredible that everything that we were eating was literally from the plot. Like you say, it was literally farm to plate. You know, the chicken that we had was, you know, chicken that somebody had to go and, you know, catch, you know, that afternoon. All the pulses that we ate, the veggies all came from the farm. And going back to the statistics that you shared, I mean, that's the majority of Kenyans, you know. So if we look at it, that the majority of Kenyans are walking,
mm-hmm.
they're tilling land, they are carrying stuff, they are eating
fruit and vegetables that they've grown. Yeah.
Not many have access to what we're talking about, you know, the fast food, whatever. And that's why I said for campaigns like this, I really believe that actually they should be taken quite seriously and schools should take on some of these challenges to influence what goes or to sensitize children themselves. I remember actually my kids' school did that really well when my kids were in primary school, that we were called in as parents and basically told, look, it is unacceptable what some of these kids are bringing in as snacks for break, you know? And so we're making it very mandatory that Monday to Thursday, your kids will only be allowed to have healthy snacks. So that means you have to pack an apple or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And on Fridays, we'll allow them one piece of junk. And it worked really well because for my kids in particular, they're like, no, Mom, we can't eat this because it's Monday to Thursday. We have to be healthy. And so I think when kids are educated on the importance of eating healthy and the importance of being active from an early age, they will I think they will choose that.
Anne-Marie, another quote from you.
Yes.
As we come towards the end
I'm
of our
I'm very impressed of all these quotes that you've dug up.
You're having quite prolific on social media, so it wasn't so hard. Now, you've said never measure your progress using someone else's ruler.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, just on that, what would be your advice to a woman, say, around the same age as you, so just fresh, turned 50, who is really struggling to find the time or the motivation to exercise?
Yeah. One foot in front of the other. Just as long as you just keep going, you know, even on the spin bike, you know, you're next to the person who's making it look really easy, just as long as you're keeping one foot in front of the other, just push at your own pace and use yourself as the benchmark. And yeah, just keep going. And by nature, I'm also quite competitive. So if I see somebody also, you know, whatever, I want to keep up with somebody, you know, the person that I perceive is pushing. But yeah, I don't think it helps to compare. You know, just like I don't think it helps to compare body sizes. We're all different. And as long as we know we are applying ourselves. So, for example, and this is something, again, if I happen to be teaching a spin class, for example, or, you know, I ask somebody to do a certain number of reps if it's a different kind of class, it's you versus you. If you're not turning up intensity when you're meant to and you're doing it only because you want to feel like you're shining in the class and you're keeping up with everybody, ultimately it's you that's not going to get the benefit of whatever it is that you're setting up or you're supposed to be doing. And again, borrowing that quote that we all know, you know, fitness is a journey, not a destination. I mean, what is your intention for yourself? For me, I know I want to get stronger. I want my endurance to improve. And it's not going to do that if I don't push. For me, it's just ultimately becoming stronger. And I get inspired when I see these, you know, 80-year-olds doing amazing things.
Well, wow, okay. Yeah. Now, on that inspirational note, Anne-Marie Barugu, thank you very much.
And thank you, Julie. Thank you so much.
This is the Born Active podcast. You can find Anne-Marie on Instagram, Anne-Marie Barugu, all one word. I'm Julie Marks. Thanks for listening.